Chapter 3. Growing up in politics. Many people choose to get involved in politics as student activists in college, as young citizens involved in civic affairs, or as middle-aged people concerned with their community. A few, like me, are born with politics in their blood. I've been involved with politics in one way or another for as long as I can remember. My mother was a trailblazer for women in politics. In 1972, when I was 4 years old, she was elected to the Austin School Board. A few years later, she became the first woman president of the board. By the time I was nearing the end of third grade, she was elected the first woman mayor of Austin and would win election to an unprecedented 3 2-year terms. I remember going to a U.S. mayor's conference in Atlanta, Georgia with my mother and older twin brothers during her first term in the late 1970s. The conference always featured chaperoned children's events while the elected officials participated in meetings. Among other outings, we got to go to Six Flags Over Georgia. As a kid, I always loved the thrill of a roller coaster. Little did I know what good preparation that was for someone who would enter politics. My older brothers were a little less adventurous. I'm not trying to imply any wimp factor here, or perhaps less willing to wait in a long line for a 2-minute adrenaline high. So I was left waiting by myself in line for the new double-loop mind bender. As I stood there, wearing my big name tag with the U.S. Mayor's Conference logo, a college student the size of an offensive lineman looked down at it and asked, "So your dad's mayor of Austin?" All of 10 years old and oblivious to how unusual my mother's accomplishment was in those years, I replied matter-of-factly, "No, my mother is." The guy was stunned and yelled ahead to his buddies, "Hey guys, get this. This kid's mother is mayor of Austin." I turned a bit red at receiving this unsought attention in the roller coaster line, though not enough to keep me from sharing a little more with them about one of my heroes, my mom. It was an early political lesson for a kid who thought little about the significance of my mayor's gender or how unusual it was in those days for a political leader to be a woman. To me, she was the high-energy supermom who packed school lunches, fixed dinner when she could, drove me to my tennis matches, attended my Little League games, helped me with school projects, paid for my hamburger and fries at the neighborhood Holiday House restaurant, disciplined my brothers and me when we misbehaved, let me play in her office or the back of council chambers, hauled me along to receptions, way too many I would add, and happened to run a big city the rest of the time. And during most of her time as mayor, Mom was a single parent. It all seemed normal to me in my preteen years. Only now do I fully appreciate what a remarkable woman my mother was and is. My mother and father divorced when I was 10. Back then, I did not understand why. My dad, an attorney, was a good father to me in those innocent years, but we grew apart as the years went by. Like most kids, I've got warm memories of my dad, clinging to his chest hairs when he would playfully pretend to drop me, at age 4 or 5, into the blue waters of a swimming pool's deep end, holding me up in his arms, walking into the darkness of our front yard as he pointed out the Big Dipper or the stars of Orion, telling a story from Greek mythology, or helping coach my Little League baseball team. But after the divorce, the times we talked and spent together grew shorter and farther apart. Nowadays, we see or talk to each other very infrequently, but he is still the dad I know, fondly recall, and will always unconditionally love. My brothers and I were blessed to be close to all 4 of our grandparents, and they influenced us in a tremendously positive way as we were coming of age. Grandma McClellan, who volunteered at the church thrift store and taught Spanish to kindergartners in San Antonio, liked to spoil us and let us have fun. She raised 4 daughters and a son, my father, while Grandpop worked as a petroleum engineer, among the first to graduate from the University of Texas with a degree in the field. He was a good man of slender build and few words who grew up in small-town Texas. He enjoyed spending spare time with family, working in the yard of their modest house in San Antonio, and listening to Texas Longhorn football and baseball games on the radio he kept next to his recliner. His hearing wasn't great in his later years, but just being around him was nice. While Granddad Keaton taught the law, as Mom likes to say, in our family, Grandma Keaton was the law. Grandma Keaton came to the University of Texas in the early 1930s from the University of Georgia in her hometown of Atlanta to attend the law school. She was enrolled in Granddad's class. He was a young professor who had recently graduated from the law school, and one thing led to another. Grandma never quite finished law school. She looked after my brothers and me quite a bit, keeping us in line and making sure we knew our manners. My granddad, Page Keaton, a legendary dean of the University of Texas Law School, always had a great wit about him. He and Grandma were married on March 4th, or as Granddad used to quip, 2 days after Texas gained its independence, I lost mine. Instead of referring to how many years they had been married, he talked about how they had gone 63 rounds when celebrating their anniversary. But the two were inseparable. To this day, I tear up when thinking about the time I took Granddad to visit my ailing grandmother in the hospital, She had been there for a few days, while he, aging and frail, unable to get around without the help of a wheelchair or walker, had been stuck at home worrying about his lifelong sparring partner. I set him down in the chair next to Grandmom's hospital bed. She was unable to sit up the day we visited. I noticed Granddad, using all his strength, starting to rock himself forward in the chair. He was trying to push himself up, and I grabbed under his arms to help him. He had one focus, my grandmother. Now standing and shaking a little, using every bit of his strength, he leaned down with some help from me to kiss her and said, "I love you, Madge. I hope you come home soon." In that moment, I thought, that's what it's all about. Here is this accomplished man of great intellect and strong character, and what matters most to him in these final years is not all he achieved in his profession, but all he shared with the family in which he instilled so much good. Granddad grew up in Northeast Texas on a small farm. After picking cotton in his early years in Red River County, he vowed to have a sit-down job when he was older. He found it along with a lectern at the University of Texas Law School. Not long after he worked his way through school, he worked his way into a professorship. He ended up teaching all the way to age 86. He served 25 years as the dean of the law school and built it into one of the finest in the nation. He came to be known as one of the leading experts on tort law in the country. A favorite story about my granddad was told to me by a family friend and a UT law school graduate several years ago, not long after my grandfather passed away. This friend had been in a pre-law class that granddad spoke to. My granddad, standing at the podium in the theater-style classroom, looked over his glasses resting on his nose and asked students if they knew what made a good lawyer. One student toward the back of the room jumped up and said, "Dean Keaton, I believe right is right and wrong is wrong, and I believe in good over evil. Do you think I will make a good lawyer?" Without missing a beat, my granddad peered up at the student and replied, "No, but you'll make a good Batman," to lots of laughter in the room. I thought how much that sounded like the man I knew, who had a great, witty way of making a point. My granddad was teaching the students that the law is not always black and white, nor should a lawyer view it that way. The truth tends to involve plenty of nuance and shades of gray. My granddad's class was often referred to by students as Keaton's Comedy Hour, but he was also renowned for his enormous knowledge of the law and his influence in shaping it for the better. To those in his profession who knew him and learned from him, Granddad was more than a good man. He was a great man, to be respected, admired, and emulated. Some of my favorite times with Granddad and Grandmom were attending University of Texas football games. They had 4 tickets in the faculty section, and I usually brought a friend along. I started attending UT football games at an early age in the 1970s, and warmly remember the days of Heisman Trophy winner Earl Campbell and our national title runs that fell short. UT football was part of our family life, and it became an inseparable part of my life, too. Back in the 1950s and early 1960s, my granddad used to kick himself. For a brief period before becoming dean of the UT Law School, he was hired as dean of the law school at the University of Oklahoma. He happened to serve on the athletic council that helped recruit Bud Wilkinson to OU. Wilkinson led the Sooners to many victories over UT in one of college football's great rivalries. My future wife, Jill, knew our courtship was serious when I let her take possession of my season tickets. She was living in Austin, and I was working in D.C. when we met. In my youth, however, politics and current events, more than Longhorn sports, is what we spent time discussing and debating at our kitchen table. I learned that politics is a way to make a positive difference in people's lives. Granddad liked to say, "It's not the dollars you make, it's the difference you make," referring to what matters most in life. Growing up in the local political spotlight of Austin had its ups and downs. Our mother, the mayor, tried to keep things pretty normal, and my 3 older brothers and I never let things go too much to our heads. Mom used to remind me, "What your friends do is one thing. What you do could end up on the front page of the paper." We tried to avoid undue attention at all cost, while still taking life in a lighthearted way. Even if we were the mayor's kids, we were not about to let the pomp and ceremony of the political spotlight change who we were. Just kids trying to grow up and join ourselves in a middle-class family. Our mother did her best to keep us humble. I was none too happy the day she picked me up from junior high school and said we had to stop by a reception for the Texas A&M alumni downtown and had no time to stop by home. I wore my orange and white Texas number 1 t-shirt to school that day because it was the week of the UT-A&M football rivalry. Now she was unconvincingly telling me how the alumni of the arch-rival Texas Aggies would have no problem with it. "Oh, don't worry," Mom said. "They'll get a kick out of it. It'll be fun." Yeah, right, I thought. All I remember from the downtown business attire reception upstairs in a balcony was the slightly inebriated, loud Aggie alum who came up behind me and tried to lift my shirt over my head. His fellow alums nearby enjoyed a laugh at my embarrassed adolescent expense. Yeah, tons of fun, Mom. Still, she did instill in my brothers and me the importance of public service as a way to make a positive difference and change things for the better. My brothers and I grew up in a Democratic household, as had my mother and father. Mom was considered a moderate to conservative Democrat, a political centrist, when she served as mayor of Austin, although in Texas, mayors and city council candidates do not run for office under any party label. Her coalition included the more affluent, conservative-leaning northwest part of the city and the heavily African-American east, with the liberal urban areas near the university tending to oppose her. Generally speaking, she worked to keep taxes down, make sure city services were fully funded, and preserve Austin's wonderful quality of life while promoting economic growth. At the time, Austin was in the midst of a significant growth spurt. Its population would go from 322,000 to 461,000 in just 10 years, and becoming a technology hub in addition to being a government and university town. Mom was plenty tough enough for the highly charged political environment, knowing how to form winning coalitions and finding common ground to get things done, at least until her third term when the coalition turned decidedly liberal. Spending a fair amount of time around City Hall and in the back of council chambers tagging along with Mom, I learned about the political art of deliberation, thoughtful persuasion, and compromise for getting things done. Austin politics could be rough, though, and it was difficult to ignore the uglier things people said about Mom. But my brothers and I never let our distress show outwardly. It is hard not to take things personally when it's your mom being attacked. But those tough boyhood lessons made it much easier for me not to take things personally later during my adult years in the rough-and-tumble world of politics. Probably the most disturbing part of Mom's mayoral days was the death threats she received. I believe it only happened a couple of times, each during one of her three campaigns. I recall one of my brothers picking up the phone and hearing some guy say, "I'm going to kill your mother." The threats never materialized, but I remember Mom attending a Little League baseball game of mine with some plainclothes Austin police officers who protected her around the clock when such a threat was made.